Okay, we're recording. So if we, this is a word tonight or tomorrow night is already, we're getting ready for Shabbos. It's Parshas Naso. Naso, besides for being the longest parsha in the Torah, it is 176 psukim, quite long, by far the longest parsha. It is also my bar mitzvah parsha. My bar mitzvah was Parshas Naso just 3 or 4 years ago. I can't remember which one. Not so long ago. And so this is exciting for me to be able to share together with you the words of Torah from my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, Parshas Naso. So Naso has in it a couple of different themes, a couple of different topics. Just as we keep going, just want to make sure quickly. Helene, can you see the screen? Is it see the words recalibrating? Do you see that? Helene, can you, thumbs up, Helene. Or Beverly? Thumbs up if we can see. Great. Okay. So one of the major topics in Parshas Naso is the topic or the parsha of what's called the Sota. The Sota is the woman who is potentially, and then you know, in some scenarios actually found to have been unfaithful to her husband, to have unfortunately committed adultery. And this woman, she goes through a process, and her purity and her attempt for purity to be able to reestablish the marital harmony between her and her husband. But this parsha, this discussion of the Sota woman, the woman who is potentially unfaithful to her husband, the woman who's gone astray, is placed directly before another topic, which is the topic of the Nazir. The Nazir, or the Nazirite, which you may be familiar with, is an individual who takes a vow, and they therefore have to refrain from cutting their hair. You know, they can't have the luscious locks. They also will refrain from drinking wine, and they also cannot become tamei mes. They cannot be exposed to a dead body. So those are the three things a Nazir cannot do. And the question, which many of the commentators ask, and already the Talmud asked the question, is, well, why is the parsha, why is the topic of the Sota woman placed directly before the topic dealing with the Nazir? What connection do they have? You know, they seem they could both could have been taught at any point in the Torah. Why did God specifically teach these two parshios back to back in Parshas Naso? What's the reason for that? So there are a couple approaches to this, but the major approach, the one which is quoted in the Gemara and also by Rashi, that we know Rashi, the famous medieval commentary in the Torah, perhaps the most prominent commentary in all of Jewish history. Rashi, in his commentary on the Torah, writes as follows: Lama Nismecha Parshas Nazir, in source number 2. Lama Nismecha Parshas Nazir La Parshas Sota. Why is Parshas Nazir right after Parshas Sota? So says the Gemara, this is Rashi quoting from the Talmud. From the Talmud, and I believe it's in Tainus, the Gemara says as follows: Lomar Lecha, to teach you, Shekol haroes sota bikilkula. Sorry, I'm going to take a drink of water. Shekol haroes sota bikilkula yazir atzmo min hayayin. So Gemara asks, why is the section of Nazir dealing with the Nazir right next to the parsha of Sota? And the answer is to teach you that someone who has seen a Sota in her disgrace should abstain from wine. What does that mean? It's referring to? So the answer, the broader explanation is that anyone, if someone goes to the temple, part of the Sota's process, part of the Sota's healing process was she would have to actually go to the Beit HaMikdash and undergo this whole grandiose procedure of drinking the Sota water with the Kohen and this whole complex procedure in her attempt to become pure from her discretions, or to hopefully, you know, false, you know, accusations, but God forbid actual discretions. So the Sota would have to come to the temple, and she'd have this whole, you know, order of events to take place. So the Gemara says that the reason why Parshas Nazir is right after Parshas Sota in the Torah is to teach us that if someone happens to be in the temple at the time that a Sota woman is undergoing her whole process, that person should take a vow of Naziris. That person should become a Nazirite. That's the Gemara says. Anyone who happens to be, look at the words again, Shekol haroes sota bekil kula yazir atzo min hayayin. Anyone who comes to the temple and happens to be there at the moment that a sota is undergoing her process, that individual should take the vow of Naziris. Should take a vow to become a Nazir. Should refrain from wine and the dead bodies and the haircuts as well. So the question, which should bother each and every one of us in this room, is, anyone, what's the obvious question on this piece of Gemara? What's the obvious question? What's an obvious question? That's taking suggestions.
What does wine have to do with the sota?
Well, okay. Yeah, what else? Yeah, Ira, very good. Anyone else have a, someone else rest, I'll raise their hand.
Could it not be just by accident that this individual happens to be in the Beis HaMikdash when the sota is there or in her process?
Exactly, right. So both Ira and Anna nailed it, which is that what in the world is one through the other? This person happened to be in the temple. He was going to the temple because he was bringing in a korban, thanking God for something wonderful happened in his life. He was going to the Beis HaMikdash for some other reason. And he happened to be there when a woman was in the sota. Why in the world should that require him to become a Nazir? It was complete happenstance. Like, I'm walking on the street, and I happen to see a car accident. Now I have to go and take driving lessons? It has nothing to do with me. But why should my seeing, why should my witnessing of the sota make me take a vow of Naziris? It's got no connection to me. It was completely happenstance. Why would the Gemara make this assertion that someone who happens to see a sota should have to undergo a vow of Naziris? That's a very obvious and, I would say, almost, very disturbing question in the Gemara. What is the connection between one and the other? So, that's the question which we're going to try to answer tonight. Before we answer that question, we have to ask one more question, and that is actually a further analysis of this concept of Naziris. Now, we know the Nazir is someone who takes a vow to refrain from wine and from becoming tamei mate to becoming exposed to ritual impurity for a dead body and from haircuts as well. Now, the question is, how is this person who becomes a Nazir, how are they viewed in Jewish literature? How do we view them? Do we think it was a good thing to become a Nazir, a bad thing, a holy thing, an in-between thing? How are they viewed? Now, you might think it's impractical and irrelevant, but the truth is that this past year, this current year, I teach also, besides for being the rabbi at our lovely synagogue, I also teach at Ida Crown Jewish Academy. And this year, we are learning Sefer Bamidbar, which is the Sefer we're currently in. It's this book in the Torah, Numbers. And we are learning Parshas Naso. And one of the smart aleck kids in the room, when we got to the story of the Nazir, he said out loud, "Hey, Rabbi, guess what?" I'm like, "What?" He's like, "I'm a Nazir." So he tried making himself into a Nazir. Now, whether or not how that works nowadays, that's very complicated, actually, and I wouldn't recommend it. Don't do this at home. Don't say, "I'm a Nazir." It's not a good idea nowadays because the process for becoming an un-Nazir is not so simple. But so this smart aleck kid, "Yo, Rabbi, I'm a Nazir." So how do we view the Nazir in Jewish thought? How's the Nazir viewed? So there are two approaches in the Gemara. This is the Gemara in Mesechet Tainis, Ta'anit, Andaf, Yud Aleph, Min Aleph, 11a. And the first opinion says as follows. We're in source number 3 now. Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, the Great, says, "What is the meaning when the verse says, with regard to a Nazir, or Nazirite, and he will atone for him that he sinned by the soul?" Right? The Torah says that after the Nazir finishes his Naziris, he has to bring a korban chatat, a sin offering. That's usually brought after someone does a sin. So the question is, why does the Nazir have to bring a sin offering after he finishes his Nazir period? And the Gemara answers, the reason, what was his sin? So the Gemara says in the line, "Rather the Nazir sinned by the distress he caused himself when he abstained from wine in accordance with the terms of his vow." So what was his sin? His sin was that he unnecessarily held himself back or didn't allow himself to have wine. What does that mean? It means that God wants us to enjoy the world. We're supposed to have good wine. Yes, we know we have mitzvot. We know there are foods we can and cannot eat. We know where there are activities we can and cannot indulge ourselves in. But within the confines of Jewish law, we're not supposed to live lives cut off from the world. We're supposed to appreciate the beauty and splendor of God's creation. We're supposed to enjoy good wine. If it was cheap wine he wasn't enjoying, so then that's a fine thing. If it's cheap, you know, if it's Rashi light, no problem with that. But if he was holding himself back from a good French wine, that's a problem. You're supposed to enjoy good wine. My mother-in-law was on the call this evening. She enjoys a good glass of wine. As a matter of fact, I think sometimes she's actually been on this class, drinking a cup of wine. I don't see her tonight drinking wine, but she's there. She's waving hi. No wine tonight. She's got water. Kind of lame, whatever. But one should not hold themselves back from having a good glass of wine. So since the person unnecessarily held himself back, potentially, that is a sin because one caused unnecessary harm, so to speak, to his physical enjoyment of the world. That's the first opinion. So seemingly, according to this opinion, the Nazir is not an ideal thing to engage in. It's not ideal to be a Nazir. But then the Gemara quotes another opinion. The next paragraph. Conversely, Rabbi Elazar says, so not Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, a different Rabbi Elazar, common name, it's kind of like David Schwartz. So what does he say? One who accepts a fast upon himself is called sacred, kadosh. Okay, why is he called sacred? Because the Torah says that it is stated with regard to the Nazir, he shall be sacred. He shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow long. So we see there are two approaches in Jewish thought as to how we view the Nazir. The first opinion says the Nazir is not ideal. Ideally is to be able to engage in this world in a healthy fashion, to appreciate God's creation, to appreciate the pleasure of this world, but within the confines of Jewish law. The second opinion says, no, the Nazir is ideal. It's ideal to be a Nazir, and it's not only that, but you're considered a kadosh, a saint, a sacred individual. So we see we have this machloket, we have this disagreement in Jewish thought as to how we view the Nazir. Now, if all was a disagreement, I would tell you, okay, you know, we Jews, we love to argue. You know, two Jews, three shoals. It's part of Jewish tradition to argue, and that's fine. However, the Rambam, the Rambam was a famous medieval commentary, the Rambam, or Moshe ben Maimon, you know, if not for Rashi, the other most, you know, perhaps most preeminent and prominent individual from the Middle Age period was definitely the Rambam. He codified Jewish law and much else with his famous Mor Nevuchim, you know, the guy for the perplexed, which is actually the inspiration for our weekly Thursday class. The Parsha for the Perplexed is based off of the play on the words, the Rambam's book. So the Rambam writes as follows, and this is where it gets confusing. We're going to actually do this outside. In this source number 4, the Rambam echoes the first Gemara and says that someone who takes the Baal of Naziris is called a sinner. Called a sinner. Why is he called a sinner? Because he held himself back from engaging in the mutter, the permissible pleasure of this world. So he's a sinner. Okay, so we would assume the Rambam is following the opinion of the Rabbi Elazar HaKapar. He's in accordance with the first opinion. The problem is, later on, the Rambam says the opposite. In the source number 5, the Rambam says that then a Nazir who takes a Baal Naziris in a holy fashion is considered a kadosh, a saint, a sacred individual. So the Rambam, when he's supposed to, his job is to codify Jewish law, what he just did is that he paskined, he wrote his opinion halakhically according to both approaches. You can't do that. You can't say that the dress is both blue and green. It's one or the other. What color are her eyes? The blue eyes or the green eyes? It can't be both. And when I was suggested to my wife, Mrs. Mitch, already a few years ago, so I got someone sent me a suggestion to go out with her, and was a friend of mine, and he sent me a picture of her. And in the picture, my wife to be, she was wearing a beautiful blue dress, and her eyes were sparkling blue. So I'm like, you know what? That's the girl for me. Blue eyes, that's my girl. You know, I got blue eyes, I got to marry a blue-eyed person. So lo and behold, the first date, we go out. It's dark outside, I can't see her eye color. Okay, fine. Meanwhile, Already, I think the first number of dates we were all at night, I can ever see her eyes well. Finally, it's daytime, I see her. She's not wearing a blue dress. Guess what? Her eyes are green/gray. They're not blue. The blue eyes were from the blue dress. So, meanwhile, some say, no, she has blue eyes. Depends on the color. No. The eyes are blue or not blue. You know, it's very simple. You know, I have three children, Kanai and Hara. My oldest has my wife's eyes. It's okay. She has the gray-green eyes. And my next two have the blue eyes. Baruch Hashem, thank God I have blue-eyed children also. But you can't have two colors. You know, you're either blue or you're not blue. So the Rambam can't say being a Nazir, it's holy, it's wonderful. Being a Nazir, the sinner. What is it? Either you're a sinner or you're holy. You can't be both. That doesn't make sense. So how is the Rambam assuming and writing in accordance with both opinions? You can't do that. Either it's us or a mutter. Either it's permissible or not allowed. What is it? So we had two questions so far. The first question is, what in the world is going on with the Gemara that says that the person who sees the Sota in the Beit HaMikdash to become a Nazir, he happened to be there. He was there. He was there bringing something else. He happened to see. Now he's got to become a Nazir. What an inconvenience. Can you imagine? Let's say imagine you're going to the Beit HaMikdash to bring a Korban, and your kid's wedding is the next week. And now all of a sudden, you see the Sota. Oh, no, I can't drink at my kid's wedding. No wine at the wedding. What's going on? It's a horrible inconvenience. Why should this person have to become a Nazir? The second question is, what's going on with the Nazir to begin with? Is the Nazir a good guy or a bad guy? What is it? Is he positive or is it negative? How do we view the Nazir in Jewish thought and Jewish literature? So these are two questions we have. And now, as with everything, it's time to answer the questions. So what's going on here? Let's try to figure this out. I think the answer to these questions lies in another Rambam. This is source number 6. The Rambam here, this is in Hilchot Deot. This is the Rambam section on, really, he goes through really a lot of human behavior, just to be how to be a good person in Hilchot Deot. You know, he gives a lot of baseline instruction for how to be a healthy person. What's interesting, a lot of Hilchot Deot, of this section of the Rambam, is actually based off of Aristotelian science and Greek philosophy. It's a famous, the Rambam was very much well-versed in Greek philosophy, and specifically in Aristotle, and a lot of Hilchot Deot from the Rambam is actually based upon Aristotelian philosophy. So the Rambam writes as follows. This is in Hilchot Deot in the Rambam. He says like this: someone who is soul sick. You know, we know people who are actually physically sick, heart sick, and other people who are soul sick. What does soul sick mean? It means one can use to try to repent from iniquities and from living a sinful lifestyle. So Rambam asks, what's the cure for someone who is soul sick? What's the cure? So the Rambam writes as follows. We're on line number 2. He who is of a hot temperament should be taught to demean himself this wise. If he be smitten and cursed, he must not feel the insult at all, and follow this way a long time until anger will be completely rooted out from his heart. Okay, what about someone who's arrogant? And he who is arrogant should accustom himself to a life of extreme self-abasement by occupying the lowermost seat of everybody and dress in such rags which shame those that wear them, and do such in like matters until the haughtiness of his heart will be rooted out of him, when he will then return to the middle way, what we call the Shvil HaZahav, the golden mean, which is the good way. But when he will return to the middle, which he should follow the rest of his life, and this line he should follow in all the rest of his tendencies, if he had distanced himself to the extreme point of one, he should remove himself to the extreme end of the other, and follow it up until a long time until he may return to the good way, which is the middle standard in each and every tendency. What's he saying? The Rambam is giving us a path, a recipe, a prescription for curing our bad midot, our bad character traits. And he says as follows: if someone is prone and has a tendency to act inappropriately in regards to any of the midot, if someone gets angry really quickly or is very haughty, so the Rambam writes, the way you overcome that midah, that negative character trait, is by going to the opposite extreme. To the opposite extreme. You know, if you get really angry all the time, so train yourself to not react at all, for as long a time you can until you feel that you've actually completely killed your desire and your your gut reaction to always react in an angry fashion. You know, to quote our Heliga Seinfeld, you gotta learn how to yell hoochie mama, right? You gotta know when to yell it to hold back from your anger. If you got that, wonderful. If you didn't, you gotta catch up on Seinfeld. Okay. But you gotta know how to hold back from reacting in an angry fashion. And then once you have overcome that for a long period of time, then you can go back to reacting in a normal way. Sometimes we get angry a little bit, you know, someone offends you, you can react in a normal, healthy fashion, but you go to the opposite extreme in order to, so to speak, recalibrate. You know, you gotta completely shake up the device in order to recalibrate, ourselves in the middle. You know, we go to an extreme to get to back towards the middle. So why is that important? So I think it explains as follows. It is true that being a Nazir is not an ideal way to live one's life as a Jew. We do not believe in living a life of celibacy. We do not believe in cutting ourselves off and living in the middle of nowhere in a monastery, not talking to anybody, and, you know, disengaging from the world. As a matter of fact, the holiest Jew, the Kohen Gadol, the holiest Jew in the holiest moment, in the holiest time of year, in the holiest place. You had holiest person, holiest place, holiest time, the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur. The most important thing that he must have in order to be able to be qualified for that service is he must be married. He must have a wife. That is the most important qualification. So much so the person must have a wife that we actually set aside that if God forbid the Kohen Gadol's wife might die, God forbid pass away before Yom Kippur, we have a second Kohen Gadol set aside just there waiting to make sure that the Kohen Gadol, who's going to do the service on Yom Kippur in the temple, has a wife, is married. Because Judaism does not believe in running to extremes. We believe in living a healthy, balanced life, engaging in the world, but also committed to God. That's what we believe as the ideal way to live one's life. However, there are moments, and there are times in our life, when we need to recalibrate, to reset. If we see ourselves becoming overindulgent, if we see ourselves becoming way too far to an extreme, we become too obsessed, we become too engrossed in a negative trait, in a overly this worldly focused activity, then sometimes we have to cut it out cold turkey. You know, unfortunately, I'm sure we know people who in their lifetime have struggled with addiction and of certain substances, and even alcohol. And much as we in Judaism, you know, believe alcohol is a place, is a holy place in our practice with our kiddush and beyond that as well. But God forbid someone becomes an alcoholic. Wine, it is no like, oh, just I'll have a cup of wine at kiddush. They have to cut it out completely, entirely. You have to learn, sometimes you have to literally go cold turkey to cut out that which we are unhealthily addicted to. That is the Nazir. The Nazir is the person who realizes that they need to recalibrate. They need to reset because they're living a life which is overly indulged, too much, too connected, too disconnected from God, too disconnected, too detached from living a life dedicated to God. And therefore, they need to go to the extreme. They need to cut out the wine completely. They need to cut out the attention to their own physical appearance, let the hair grow wild, to be able to recalibrate, to reset, with the long-term goal, though, of getting back towards the middle, of getting back towards the healthy balance in the middle. The Nazir does not remain a Nazir for the rest of his life. It's only for, really, ideally 30 days that a Nazir returns back to normal lifestyle, hopefully with the ability to re-engage with the world in a healthy fashion. That's the difference. The person who remains a lifelong Nazir, that's sinful. You can't, long term, we're supposed to engage in the world, be part of the society, appreciate God's creations, appreciate the enjoyments in life. But there are moments, there are times in our life when we have to learn how to reset, to cut out in order to recalibrate. But the question is, How do we know when we need to recalibrate? How do we know when it's appropriate to take those extreme steps in the opposite direction, to cut out, to go cold turkey, to cut out our, to cut ourselves off from our quote unquote physical indulgences. How do we know when we need to have that reset? Is there some magical light that's going to flicker above our head saying, you know, time to press the reset button? There's some magic. Is there some voice from God that come down and tell us, Yehuda Myers, time to become a Nazir? No, that ain't gonna happen. So what's the key? When do we know we need to have that ability to take a step back in order to reset? So I think that's actually the first Gemara we learn, the one that Rashi quoted. Because if we notice, when Rashi said, when the Gemara said, that the person who goes to the temple needs to become a Nazir, then to say someone who happens to be at the temple becomes a Nazir. It says, Kol haroe sota bikilkula. The key word there being roe. Anyone who sees a sota in her state of defilement, in her disgrace, should become a Nazir. Why is the word roe important? Because Re'iya in Judaism and Jewish literature doesn't just mean physically seeing. It doesn't just mean that you happened to glance and you saw her there. Re'iya means much more than that. And how do we know that? Because in the beginning, it all goes back to the beginning. In the beginning of time, when God created the world, and the first thing God created was light. And after he created light, the Torah says, this is in Bereishit, in Perek, out of the first Perek, the fourth verse, it says, Vayar Elohim et Haor ki tov. And God saw that light was good. God saw? God has eyes? What do you mean God saw? So says the Rambam Mor Nevuchim, the Re'iyah, when it comes to this deeper understanding, Re'iyah means an intellectual perception, a internalization. Seeing is believing. It's more than just what your eyes physically saw. It's what you internalized, what you perceived, what you saw and understood going on around you. That's what Re'iya means. So what's the Gemara really saying then? Let's go back to our Gemara for a second. The Gemara says, Kol haro'es sota bilkilkula yazer asumina yayin. Anyone who comes to the temple, and the only thing they see, what they walk away with, what they internalize is, oh look, there's a sota woman in her state of disgrace. If that's what they walk away with, then their mind is full of schmutz. If all they see is the negative and the garbage, then their mind is cluttered and polluted. If they can't appreciate what's really going on in the temple, the Talmud tells us that there were countless miracles. They had it in the temple every single day. The fire came down from the heavens, and the bread never went stale, and so much more. And all you saw was the sota woman. Oh, Namach, look at her. She's all disgraced. That's all you internalized. That's all you saw. It's all you took came away with. Then it's time for you to take a reset. If your mind's in the gutter, that's where your mind is. That we need to reset the button, reset the scale. You know, there's a famous test, which at the beginning was very popular when it first came out and then was rejected, but then since then has actually found to be actually a meaning and value, which is called the Rorschach, you know, the Rorschach test, the Inplot test, which now has actually been revived and it's more popular and it's more accepted in the world of psychology and therapists. But the question is, what do you see? What do you see in this image? What do you see? I wonder what everyone sees. And we can all, you know, talk about it afterwards maybe. But the question is, when we experience life's events, life's moments, life's, you know, the different events in lifetime, in our lives, what are we seeing? What are we experiencing? What are we allowing ourselves to take in? If all we take in is the schmutz around us, if all we take in is the garbage and the dirt, all we see is the negative, then yeah, it's time for a reset. You know, over this past week and a half, I think we got a pretty strong telling of what the world sees. You know, we saw that Israel was defending itself from indiscriminate attacks, rocket attacks on the civilian population, and doing their best to respond in a forceful but balanced fashion. And what did the world see? What did the media see? What did countless politicians and social activists and celebrities and academics all see? All they saw was Israel killing civilians. They failed to see, and they continuously failed to see, how careful and how measured Israel is with valuing human life, with dropping leaflets on the civilians, letting them know, by the way, we have to bomb this premise because there are rockets there, there are Hamas intelligence offices there. But all they see is the death. All they see is the bombs. They fail to see what's really going on. And it's our job. It's our job as Jews, our job as Torah Jews who are engaged in a meaningful pursuit of living a meaningful life, to try to help ourselves and help the world see. To see that there's more than what meets the surface. There's more beneath what immediately hits our eyes. And even with the Sota herself, you know, when the man enters the temple and all he sees is the Sota and her disgrace and the Sota woman undergoing the whole procedure to try to become, you know, seeing if she actually was adulterous or not. So all he sees is this woman, you know, Nebuch, the woman who cheated on her husband. That's what he sees. But the reality is that that woman is given, theoretically is given a choice. Because she didn't have to come to the temple to drink the Sota water, to go through this whole process, to embarrass herself in public. What could she have done? She could have just walked away. She could have demanded a divorce and left the marriage. But instead, she's doing, literally sacrificing her self-esteem and her kavod, her honor, in order to try to restore her marriage. That's beautiful. That's incredible. That's self-sacrifice. That's what really happened with the Sota. And that's why the Gemara says that if all you see is a negative, all you see if coming to the temple and all you see is a Sota and all you see is you see in our negative light, then you need to reset. You need to reset yourself, recalibrate, to appreciate there's so much more beneath the surface, so much more beauty, so much more spirituality, so much more goodness in the world. But we have to be able to have the ability to see beneath the surface. I want to wish us all a meaningful Shabbos and a continued opportunity for all of us to be that voice of reason, that voice of moral consciousness for the world, to stand up for what we believe in, for our country, for the state of Israel, and to be able to have the courage to continue to see beneath the surface in all aspects of our lives. I wish everyone a good Shabbos, and thank you all for joining.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Yasher Koach. Yasher Koach. Thank you, Rabbi.